It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming up on today's episode, we break down yet another blowout loss to the Avalanche as the Jets stand on the brink of playoff elimination.
Hello, everybody. Recording live from somewhere.
What's good and welcome to another episode of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon_Rewicki or the podcast at Skates Plates Pod. All right. Well, let's vent. This is going to be a fun one, but it's got to be done. CGOB's Tyson Rewicki here with us on the heels of another ugly game between the Avalanche and the Jets as Colorado cruises once again to a multi-goal victory this time, 5-1, taking a 3-1 series lead. I mean, I guess I'll ask you, Tyson, how you doing today? How's it going?
Well, it was going pretty well this today. Like, I'm not going to lie. I was just having a solid weekend.
Was it until 1:30 p.m. Central?
Yeah, about 1:41. Yeah, when puck drop came around. But, yeah, it's just disappointment. Because we'll get into it a little bit more, but I'll just use, for one word answer, I'll say a little disappointed.
Yeah, I think you're being very, very nice and very, I think you're holding back a little bit if disappointing is the word you're going to go with. I've got a couple words I want to throw your way. One of them starts with F, has a U in it. It's frustrating. It was to the point where after 40 minutes, went back outside. I was kind of doing yard work all day. And it kind of dawned on me that I think watching the Jets game was actually worse than me having to clean up dog doo-doo for 2 hours outside today. Like, they both involved doo-doo, and they were both instances and things that I didn't want to have any part in doing. It certainly was disappointing, Tyson. I mean, don't get me wrong, especially now that, you know, this seems to be the unofficial end to the Winnipeg Jets season. It's ending like this when there was so much hope and promise. But there's two big things for me after this game and where things seem to be trending headed into game five. You say disappointing. For me, it's more so enraging and infuriating. Because there's no other way to say it. The coaching on Winnipeg's side has been beyond atrocious this series. Up and down the lineup, right? You're talking about lineup decisions, combinations, pairings, who's in, who's out, breakouts, exits, entries, then the power play, then the penalty kill. Every single element of coaching at the NHL level has been a monumental mismatch, and Jared Bednar and the Avalanche staff are just feasting on what Winnipeg's thrown their way so far. We can get into everything, and we will get into everything, and how I don't think the Jets have been set up for success this series, specifically these last three games. And I think that's played a massive part in this gulf of performance between these two teams. So there's that element, Tyson, where I'm just like I'm watching it and I'm boiling, like I'm simmering But boiling underneath the surface here, just knowing that there's more this team has to give, and they're not beaten and put in the right position to even attempt to go toe-to-toe with a great Avalanche team. But then the other part of it too is there's a level of resignation and deflation where it's like they're just better. Like there's things that could be done to mitigate the disparity between the two teams, but the Avalanche are just freaking better. Like their coaches are better, their skaters are better, their systems are better. Goaltending has arguably been better as well this playoffs. Like they're just a better hockey team. And I don't even know if a fully optimized Jet squad would be able to take down the Avalanche the way that they're playing right now, basically at the peak of their powers. So it's this weird mix of I'm pissed off knowing that this team has more to give. And what we're seeing these last three games has been an embarrassment, which it has. Don't get me wrong. And I don't want to hear people saying, oh, the Avs are a good team. Don't worry about it. No, this is an embarrassing effort we're seeing being put forth by the club here. But then there's also the fact that they have McKinnon and Makar and no other team does. And as that third goal was evident, Tice, when they want to put their foot down and say, here we go, they don't really have much of an answer for it. So kind of just at a loss here and feeling empty right now.
Yeah. And two, on that Makar goal, like there wasn't even, I actually thought it was well played for the most part. Like, I didn't think the gaps were too outrageous. I thought they kind of stayed on him. And just the way that Makar was able to pull that puck in and rip it, it was maybe you want Hellebuck to make that save, but it was just a world-class play all around. But I agree with you. Like, to come out in the first period there and kind of put up the effort that you did, you know, like in a game that's essentially it is a must-win game, but it's potentially your season on the line. And you weren't ready to again. The team wasn't prepared for what the Avs were going to throw at them in the first period, in the first 10 minutes of that first period.
And how are we not prepared for it?
Exactly.
They didn't change anything. Like, what are we doing here?
And it's the complete lack of adjustments. It's not even that you're making the incorrect adjustment, or it's just the fact that there's nothing. And, you know, we pointed out, I can't remember if it was the first or second game podcast, but we were pointing out how, you know, the Avs love to play high. Like they play high up in the offensive zone. A lot of their offense is coming from point shots, from their D-men activating off the point. And there's been no change. There's like, we haven't seen, and you know, like it's just any sort of aggression out there. It's just letting the D crawl in. And then that's sort of why you see these, like you did this last episode, but these avalanches of chances and momentum shifts. It's just, That's how they're building those momentum shifts, is that they are generating an offense from the point, and that's a sustainable way of doing it. If you're not going to change the way that you've played all year, and that's what the Jets are doing right now. It's just, well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
There's that. I think Mike Kelly of the NHL said that Colorado was at 90% successful entry rate, which is impossible at the NHL level, let alone the playoff time. Like it's mind-boggling. you're right. Like it's shocking to me how they could start the game the way they did, knowing exactly what Colorado's gonna do. Like they didn't change anything, and it's so damning on the coaching staff that they didn't change anything either. Like you know what they're doing, so adjust to it. They didn't adjust to it at all. And that's kind of been maybe the biggest eye-opener here, Tyson, over these last, even if you want to say the last two games, right? Like the Jets win game one, kind of a crazy one, whatever. Game two, close, second period collapse ultimately dooms the team at that point. Going into Denver, you should have a very, very clear idea of what Colorado was looking to do and then figure out counterattacks to try to slow down the Avalanche. You know what I mean? And it has been a shocking amount of stubbornness on the Winnipeg side to just keep going back to the well. We play a certain way, we line up a certain way, and that's how we're going to do it. We're going to win, lose, live, die by doing that. Well, guess what? You're losing and you're dying. And they're making fun of you because of it. I mean, Jared Bednar looked like a Cheshire Cat half the game. just look like almost in disbelief. Really? You want to play us this way? Right? Like the forecheck is non-existent. You are allowing both the defensemen and McKinnon and the forward groups to build speed coming out of their own zone, which is immediately DEFCON 1, set the alarm bells out. And then once they get into the offensive zone, you're allowing them to just whip the puck all over the ice. They're breaking seams. They're winning puck bat. Like, it's everything. And there's no changes. The only changes we saw this entire series happened once the third period got underway with the team facing a 3-1 series deficit, all but in the Bucks, and them being down 3 goals, should have been 4 or 5 goals. How in the world does it take you that long to finally shake things up a little bit? And of course, the Jets play much better in the third period. But this goes back to the series last year, Tyson, against Vegas, where Winnipeg took the Golden Knights by surprise, dominated them in game one. Vegas adjusted in game two. Winnipeg had no answers, 4 straight losses. No answers in that series. The exact same thing is freaking playing out right now. It's the same thing. And there's no adjustments being made. Like, nothing. The Jets haven't changed up how they line up in the neutral zone. They haven't changed up how they attack on the forecheck. They haven't changed their god-awful penalty kill, which should be the easiest thing to do. They haven't done that. Everything is the same. Like, that's the frustrating part, is that you need to be operating at peak capacity to go toe-to-toe with the Avalanche. And the Jets are nowhere near that right now. And they are very, very fortunate this was not an ugly 4-game sweep. And to be honest, if it wasn't for Connor Hellebuyck, who I know some fans wrongly think hasn't been that good in this series, if it wasn't for him, that would have been 7-1 going into the third period. Game three would have looked a lot uglier than what it ultimately did on the score sheet there. The gulf between these two teams is the Atlantic Ocean right now.
Well, and to your point there too, I think, and I don't know whether it's being checked out or just not being, you know, up to date with today's game, but it screams a coaching staff that is kind of out of their element, right? Like, they don't have a lot of answers, and they don't know what these answers are, especially when you're seeing calling up Axel Janssen-Fjällby, putting Logan Stanley back in the lineup. Like, you really think, like, that's going to change the series around? That's what's going to...
Should we talk about the lineup moves?
Yeah, we should. Just because, yeah, the way that this is going now, we're gonna end up talking about it. So let's dive into it.
Well, so I guess let's start with Logan Stanley. I don't understand what this coaching staff is seeing, what management is seeing. He was overwhelmed his first 2 games. He was overwhelmed in game four. The speed was too much for him. I'll give him credit. He did make a great pass leading up to the Jets' only goal. Other than that, though, Colorado feasted every time he got out there on the ice. He just did not know what he was doing. I don't know on what planet they don't think Colin Miller is an upgrade. I don't care about left shot, right shot, none of that. Colin Miller 1,000% should have been in the game. And it's a waste of a pick that the team acquired him with no intention of apparently using him. But having Stanley in the game, let me put it this way. If Miller was in for Stanley, the Jets still lose. But at least they have an alternative who would have given them a little bit more. And I would have went a step further as well. I would have put Miller in over Pionk, because he's a nightmare right now when he's on the ice. I feel like that's me sugarcoating it. Colorado is the eyes wide open as soon as they see number 4 out there. So those are my thoughts on the back end, Tyson. You have any optimism to throw their way?
No. Besides the fact that, you know, Morrissey's still Josh Morrissey. That's literally the only thing the decor has to go back on, because it's getting ugly. It's been a glaring issue, and that's something that this team's going to have to address in the offseason, regardless of if they make a big comeback or not. Like, this, like, your defense just is not good enough. I love Brendan Dillon. Brendan Dillon's a great defenseman. He really shouldn't be your third best defenseman. Dylan DeMello shouldn't be your second best defenseman. You know what I mean? Like, both really good players, but even they're playing out of their roles right now. And obviously, when Dylan's in the lineup, but to go with Logan Stanley there after what we saw, it's what's going to happen. Like, you just do. That's the thing. That's what bugs me so much is that you have recent evidence and past evidence that to show that he is going to struggle in these situations. And the coaching staff ignores those when you have a guy who is an unknown commodity, like relatively unknown for your team. He's got a track record, though, where he has played well and on good teams, and you just don't give him a chance after your GM goes out and makes a move for him. To me, it's a complete miscommunication between the front office and the coaching staff, and it's malpractice at this point from the coaching staff, too.
Yeah, it's another example of their stubbornness, right? Where it's Logan Stanley's number seven, he goes in no matter what. Like, you're not even contemplating looking at a different avenue to improve this team. And I mean, not the reason they lost the game, but mind-blowing to me that they felt like Logan Stanley was the better option over Colin Miller. Now, on the forward ranks, I think the Johnsson Fjällby thing is worse than them putting Stanley in. Because I don't agree with it. At least on the back end, they can go, look, we lost the lefty, we're putting the lefty in. And we have the lefty-righty balance set up as close as we can do it, right? At least they have that to lean on. This was... I don't want to be disrespectful, so I'm trying to avoid saying, you know, heat of the moment words and phrases and things like that. But it is nonsense that Fjällby was in over Cole Perfetti. And the reasoning makes it 1,000 times worse when Rick Bowness himself says he wants him in to help on the penalty kill. And then he played as many seconds on the penalty kill, Tyson, as you did, as I did, as my dog did. It makes zero sense. And explain to me, even give me a shred of evidence or possible insight as to why he was in that lineup over Cole Perfetti and what he offers other than skating fast in a straight line and running into the boards at high speed. It makes zero sense. You need to score goals. You haven't scored goals against Colorado outside of game one. Cole Perfetti can help you in that department. He's played well with Vlad Domestikov this year on the fourth line. He's good defensively, despite what you think in the third period, holding him out of the lineup. His metrics have been outstanding there. He's an option to go up into the top six, which has struggled all playoffs long. Mind-boggling decision there. The amateur-level stuff, not putting him in the lineup, bringing in Johnsson Fjällby, who wasn't even with the team in Colorado until they had a couple injuries go down there.
Well, and two, like... Axel Johnsson Fjällby gets put into the top six in the third period.
He goes on a line with
Monahan Toffoli. Like, how pissed are you if you're Cole Perfetti? Because it's honestly a slap in the face to call a guy up. Like, and no, just you know, like no disrespect to Axel Johnsson Fjällby, he's an NHL player. Like, but that's a slap in the face to get someone called up from your AHL team to play over you and then get top 6 minutes, which you haven't really been getting for a long time, despite producing offensively. I don't want to look too far ahead, but like, you know, it makes you think, dude, have we seen the last of Cole Perfetti in a Jets uniform?
If Rick Bowness is back, 1,000%.
Oh, yeah.
People might bristle at that. If Rick Bowness is back next year, Cole Perfetti will very likely say, I don't want to be a part of this team. And I don't necessarily blame him for that. You're 100% right, Tyson. That was a bush league decision by the Jets there. If you don't believe in Cole Perfetti, then don't have him playing with the team right now. Like you would have done that. It reeked of being stuck in the 80s and 90s in terms of decision making there. That we have a top six, we have a third line check in line, we have a fourth line filled with energy guys that don't have hands. It's not, we're basically 30 years past that at this point here. And the Avalanche on the other side put in that Russian kid who's making his freaking NHL debut. Like they didn't throw in Curtis McDermott to bring in some grit and physicality. Colorado's like, no, we're trying to score goals. We're trying to win games. He's got skill. Let's throw him out there. He's playing on our third line, right? Colbert, if he was on the Avalanche, if he was on there, healthy scratch list, would have gone into that game. 1,000%.
Oh, yeah. Easy. And to... We're talking about Cole Perfetti. I also don't think David Gustafson was like that bad this series to the point where it's like, oh, let's bring up Axel Janssen-Fjällby. He's going to fix the fourth line. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Janssen-Fjällby brings more speed than Gustafson, but I think Gustafson plays a heavier game. So you like, you're not even really like, you're not even following your own logic. You're just like, oh, well, you know, we got to do something. It's like, it's just screaming. We got to do something to the lineup. I don't like the way this one guy plays. Let's just do this little switch quick. Maybe that changes things. Like, you can't possibly actually think that putting Axel Janssen-Fjällby in your lineup is going to be the difference maker in winning a playoff game. You're out of your mind if you do.
Well, and what I don't like about it too, even just taking Cole Perfetti out of the equation, that's a move done solely out of defensiveness, out of passiveness, right? Like, you're putting him in there and it's basically, let's hope we don't get scored on while he's out there. Because you know he's not scoring, right? Like, you just, I'm sorry, but you just know offensively that's a black hole line for you. You're basically just hope that let's find a way to kill those minutes off. We go net zero and we let our top guys go up against their guys, right? Like, I don't know. I don't think it's a winning decision. I don't like the mindset that goes behind it. And it makes even less sense considering the fact that your top lines have been shredded by Colorado. Shredded. And they didn't change those until the third period of game four. So,
and
I don't want to say the game was lost before they went out on the ice there, but it was certainly an ominous, foreboding sign of things to come. It didn't fill you with a lot of confidence going into the game. I'll tell you that much, Tice.
No. And then just to add a little bit more insult to injury, he didn't play, actually, on Sofiali, he didn't have any penalty kill time. He did have 7 seconds of power play time, though. And I like, there is, I mean, there's context because it was at the end, like a late power play at the end of the game, but still, it's just, it's, you know, if you aren't laughing, you're crying. Like, that was sort of thing when you look at that stat, you're like, oh, you know what? Like, it really is, it puts you at a loss for words that this is kind of like the quote unquote adjustment this team made to get themselves a big win, a season saving win. It just, I don't know. If the front office doesn't see any problems with that, then there are a lot more issues than even coaching.
Yep, 100%. And, you know, going into the game too, even let's just take the fourth line out of it for a second, Tyson. Explain to me how you could possibly see what this team had done through three games and think, you know what? Let's roll with that same forward group to start game four. Like, on what planet would anybody have thought that that was the right line of thinking to do? Blown away that there was no line adjustments. Even if you believe in your system and you want to be stubborn saying we play a certain way, we're going to live and die that way. I don't agree with that, but whatever. I can almost understand that to a degree. to throw the same guys out there expecting a different result, it's beyond insanity. There's just not a lot of concrete facts that go into the minds of the decision makers there as to why you thought that was going to work, right?
Well,
you needed to change something up there, and again, they just refused to do anything until they're forced and backed into a corner, and the game was over at that point. It's crazy that they entered that game with basically the same lineup that had gotten torched for 120 plus minutes in games 2 and 3.
What did you think about the Ehlers Niederreiter switch?
I don't get it.
Yeah, to me, like, that's, I mean, I don't like, you know, it's kind of hard to like go crazy about not having any adjustments and then making that change, the little bit of a switch up, but it just doesn't make sense. Like, you like Ehlers with Lowry and Appleton isn't going to, you know, like, those guys are, you're just really just hoping Ehlers throws a puck on net and one of them gets the rebound. And then, you know, Monahan and Toffoli have been awful. Just like really. And then Nino hasn't been great either. And then you're putting, I know, kind of more of another plotting forward with two other plotting forwards.
It was more that for me, Tyson. It's the fact that Monahan and Toffoli, they can't skate right. I mean, Monahan is miles behind the pace. Toffoli isn't too far off that as well. You're only, if you're going to have Monahan and Toffoli together, your only chance at survival is having either Ehlers or Connor with those two. The second Nina went up there, I just knew they were getting nothing from that line. So I didn't agree with the decision. Also didn't understand the logic and the reasoning that went behind it. And then to lean on Connor Schlafly-Vilardi again is, I'll go back to my word of the day, is beyond peak stubbornness. It hasn't worked all season. Like, you've had dozens of games. They don't work no matter how hard you want it to, right? Like, I want my dog to drop the tennis ball so I can throw it to him. I don't get mad at him when he doesn't do it for the millionth time. It's my fault. I got to do something differently, right? Like, it's just crazy. You just want to tear your hair out when you see some of these decisions. And I got to be honest, I'm with the players that showed frustration post-game. I'm on their side on this one. Mark Scheifele. I didn't get the exact quote, so I'll paraphrase it for both Scheifele and Niederreiter. But Scheifele essentially said, you know, one side's making adjustments. We're not doing anything right now. Nino Niederreiter echoed that sentiment, essentially saying, we've got to change how we're doing things. They haven't changed anything. And I can understand. And that's what it looked like out there, Tyson. It was a team that had no answers against the Avalanche, and they knew it. And that's what led to the absolute demolition derby that we saw through the first 40 minutes, is that you're sending guys over the ice. They know it's not going to work. Colorado knows it's going to work for them. And you're basically just hanging on for dear life and hoping for a lucky break or two.
Yeah, and the, you said that the team without answers, and if you listen to the post-game interviews with Scheifele and Nino, that's exactly what that was. Those guys didn't have answers. Even reporters were asking questions saying, well, what kind of adjustments do you have to make? And it was kind of like they were stumped. And it's just, that's scary to see, because it's, you know, it didn't scream like a team that gives you a lot of confidence coming back for game five. And that's the worrying thing too, is that knowing that it's almost like an inevitability is coming in that locker room. And that's it, you know, it was the same thing that happened last year. And it's when the going gets tough with this team, it's just, there's no pushback. And that's been one of the biggest things about this series, I feel, is that the Avalanche, you know, they score a goal and then it's just momentum shift.
I want to push back on your pushback. Oh. And it's interesting because I don't know if we'll get to this or not, but I mean, leading into the game, all the talk of the hockey world was about the Maple Leafs lost to Boston in game four and the shameful display they put on in front of their home fans. That's not what we're seeing here in Winnipeg. Like, I do think it's different. And I do think this is different than what we saw last year against Vegas. I mean, when they, and hey, maybe I'll change my tune in game five. So there is, I think, a little bit of wiggle room here. But in game five against Vegas, the Jets were tuned out. They were checked out. No interest in playing hard. No interest in competing. They didn't want any part of the postseason at that point. I haven't seen that from the Jets so far, Tyson. Like, I do think they're trying to work hard. I think their hearts are in it. They're just, I think, completely undermanned when it comes to coaching right now, and they're completely overmatched in the talent department, and they've run into a buzzsaw. I don't think it's a matter of, you know, them going out there and going through the motions like they did last year.
I agree with you. I'm not saying that this team doesn't care or that they've given up. But I also will say that, I mean, coming into this series, everyone said that Winnipeg's forward group's deeper. And we've seen Gabe Vilardi, Kyle Connor, Nick Ehlers, Sean Monahan, Tyler Toffoli. Like, all of those guys have just not shown up. And that's just a case of not showing up. Like, they just, you know, like, whether it's, I'm not saying that these players don't care, but, you know, maybe they just aren't as good as we thought they were for playoff run. And that's kind of where we are now. And is that, you know, that falls on the front office for, you know, kind of, you know, it looks great in the regular season. But I mean, we mentioned this with the Monahan trade. We had concerns about him come playoff time. Well, and those concerns were justified because he's been a non-factor in every single playoff game. We were both a little bit more, you know, bullish on Tyler Toffoli coming in. But again, he's been a complete non-factor, even more of a non-factor than Monahan. He has done nothing. Like, it's just, the whole forward group right now is just, they're outmatched, but it's not because of talent, in my opinion. It's just they're not playing the right way.
Yeah, well, and that's where I go back to. I think it's coaching. I don't think it's a management issue.
I don't totally disagree with you, but I think coaching only gets you so far too. And I really do think that, you know, the system
you run. Let me say this, Tyson. If Bednar was behind the Jets bench and Bones is over there in Colorado, is it still a 3-1 series? I don't think so.
Yeah, I think it might be. I really do. There might be some small changes in the games against each other, but really, the way that they've been playing, it's just outmatched, and it's just guys not showing up. We saw in the regular season the Jets dominate this team all throughout the season series, and now we get to the playoffs, and it's just we don't know what to do now. Like I think obviously some of the blame falls on Bones, but I think there's just as much blame on this pretty much the same core that has been here for the past 4 years and has failed to do anything since the conference final run. So I think there's a little bit of both in this argument, but I do think that this team needs more out of their forward group and their defensive.
They definitely need more of their forward group. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, like what Mason Appleton has played, like maybe Lowry. Although Lowry's had it's a tough assignment for the captain. Okay. Like, hey, slow down McKinnon, and then you look bad because he looks so good. Like, maybe Lowry and Appleton, and that's probably it. Everyone else, though, you've definitely, they've left you wanting a lot more. But I think people look at how good they were in the regular season. I think that's where, you know, having a set system, a strict adherence to how you play can lead you to 45, 50 wins. But come playoff time, like, you've got to make adjustments. You've got to change how you do things. It can't just be same old, same old, same old, same old if somebody's tearing you apart. And we're not seeing that right now. And we saw that exact same thing happen during the Vegas series last year. So it's just crazy. It's crazy, Tyson. And we'll see what the pushback is going to be in game 5, but I mean, look, we both picked the Jets to win this series, so we obviously didn't see this coming. But, man, with how well they played all year long, for it to come crashing down in almost the exact same fashion as they did against Vegas last year, it's very disheartening. And, yeah, it's potentially going to lead to a wild summer because it would be very difficult, especially when you're trying to fill an arena. As the team has made it very, you know, aware of some of the struggles they've had there, to get 15,000 people backing you if you're going to run this back for a third straight year. I just don't see it happening that way. But it starts with game 5. You know, it's just about over, but it's not over yet. And we'll see what the team's able to throw out there Tuesday night. I guess quickly on that note, Tyson, I mean, Bones kind of hinted at it. You think we see Perfetti finally get into the lineup against Colorado?
Yeah, on the fourth line.
I think we see it on the second line. I wonder what they do. I mean, Kyle Connor's playing with Mark Scheifele. That's what this coaching staff does. I think they go Scheifele, either's Connor. And I think we see probably Monahan, Perfetti, and Toffoli. And then the Lowry line reunited. The fourth line is, you know, basically who's ever left at that point.
Well, then hopefully Vlad's okay, but he's out too. So, you know, like, who knows? We might just see David Gustafson in for Vlad Nemestikov and maybe rejigging of the lines from there. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm not getting my hopes up for, like, a Cole Perfetti hero tour, you know, as much as I would love it, just because, not because of his skill set, but because of the opportunity. So That's where I'm at with that lineup decision. Even if he does get into the lineup, I don't think he's going to be given a chance to make a difference. So,
yeah, it's. I mean, it's tough too. You throw him in, you hope he doesn't do what we saw to Willie Nylander on Saturday, where he's obviously just trying to do everything to, you know what I mean? Like, you're trying too hard at some point. But I hope for the kid's sake, he gets a chance, goes into the lineup, have yourself a game, man. Like, make. I mean, he obviously won't say this, and he wouldn't say it to the coach, but he's obviously not seeing eye to eye with him right now. Like, go out there and make him eat his words, right? And let the chips fall where they may after that. It just, you know what sucks too, Tyson? It's one, there's no shame in losing to the Avalanche whatsoever. This is clearly a different team from the regular season as well. I mean, MacKinnon and Makar at this point are probably the second and third best players in all of hockey. But there's a way to lose, right? Like, there's an acceptable way to lose. And if these were 4-3 games, 3-2 games, like, you know what I mean? And it's like they're right there and they're battling and they're finding a way to hang on. And it's just, excuse me, Colorado has the answers at the end. I think people would be okay with that. The outlook would be a lot more rosy. But it's just the fact that there's no answer for what they're throwing at you right now. And there's no real level of hope that they're going to find a way to eke out a win in game 5, let alone pile 3 more W's on Colorado here.
Well, that's, and just to add on to that, because I know we're wrapping it up here, but that's what makes some of those penalty calls to me, not, it doesn't really bug me. Like, I'm not saying that the refs are where the Jets are, you know, like it's not like you're getting power plays at the end, or the Avs are getting power plays on ticky-tack calls at the end of games, and they're scoring to go up by one late in the game. Like, there's a lot of games still left to be played after those penalties, and it's just not enough effort, not enough response. Like, that's what it is. So don't blame the refs, even though some of the calls are a little bit iffy. But yeah, it's just frustrating right now because there's so much hope going in. You take game one. You think it's going to be a different year, and same response.
Well, the big thing, and I think everybody would agree on this, win or lose game 5, a repeat of what we saw against Vegas last year is beyond unacceptable. If you're going to go out, it's got to be guns blazing. You got to have that building rocking. You've got to make the Avalanche earn every inch of that ice on Tuesday night. I think if we see a repeat of that, we've got some major, major, major questions and answers we'd be looking for about what exactly this team is all about, the core of it, everything like that. So it's going to be tough. There's no doubt about it. I mean, they got to stay out of the box. That's the most obvious thing in the world. But I'm just hoping for a tight one. And to be honest, a much better effort all around here. Coaching staff, players, goaltending. Every element of the Winnipeg Jets. Like, if you're going to go out in your shield here and do so being aggressive, not passive, like we've seen way too often against the Avalanche. So, wouldn't mind doing a couple more playoff episodes of Skates and Plates, Tice. Let's put it that way. Not hopeful it's going to happen, but the funny thing is, you win game 5. Like, as negative as we are right now and as hopeless as it looks, you win game 5 and... Oh boy, just got to steal one in Colorado. You know what I mean?
You just need a little bit of doubt. And I mean, like, they're the cup-winning team, so they have that fortitude, but even cup-winning teams collapse sometimes. Like, you got to just really instill that piece of doubt. Like, if you come in into game 5 with a legit performance and you really kind of lay a beat down on them, like, that's exactly what this team needs. They need a huge confidence boost.
Well, let's see. Let's see if the boys can pull it out or if we're calling curtains on the 2023-24 season for the Jets. But we'll get back at it either way on Tuesday night and Wednesday morning is when you guys are here next from us. But until then, that'll do it for us here tonight on a Sunday, and we'll get ready for the week. And let's hope for a miracle, boys and girls. You never know. It's playoff hockey. All you need is one bounce. Maybe get it to OT. You know what I mean? Get an OTW. Then maybe we get a complete turnaround of the series. Not hopeful, but you never know. But thank you for tuning in to another episode here of Skates and Plates on the Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki, with CJ Obese Tyson Rewicki once again. Like we mentioned, we'll get back at it. Game 5, Tuesday night. We'll break down that one, see if the Winnipeg Jets can keep their season alive or if the Avalanche are moving on to round 2. So we'll talk to you guys on Wednesday morning. Until then, though, enjoy the next couple of days. Have a good time. Stay safe. We'll talk to you guys in a few days. Peace.